Welcome to the KHNS and Chilkat Valley News Recall Forum. I'm KHNS News Director Emily Files.
And I'm Chilkat Valley News Publisher Kyle Clayton. Three Haines Assembly members are up for recall in a special election next week, August 15th. They are Tresham Gregg, Heather Lindy, and Tom Morfitt, and they're here with us tonight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When organizing this event, we hoped it would give voters a chance to hear from both sides. None of the original 11 recall sponsors, including the main sponsor, Don Turner Jr., agreed to participate in this forum. Kyle and I called at least 30 recall supporters, and no one agreed to take part. We have three open chairs that we hoped would be filled by leaders of the recall effort. If anyone here is a supporter of the recall and would like to make your case, you are welcome to take one of those seats now.
Okay, so a little background. Tresham Gregg was elected to the Assembly in 2015. Heather Lindy and Tom Morfitt were elected last year. The three Assembly members are accused by recall sponsors of misconduct in office. Heather and Tom are accused of coercing a subordinate for a financial benefit, and all three are accused of violating the Alaska Open Meetings Act. We'll get more into those charges soon, but first we want to give each speaker the chance to introduce themselves, make an opening statement explaining their views on the recall. We're going to ask you to keep your responses to 3 minutes, which we may not strictly enforce, but if you start going on for too long, we'll ask you to wrap it up. Let's start with Heather.
I want to thank everybody, first of all, who have been so supportive during what has been a really difficult time. Since I was elected, I've pretty much been a target of a planned recall, lawsuit, threats. It's been challenging, and the community has been really nice and supportive, so I want to thank them for that. In terms of the recall, the charges are baseless. I never coerced the police chief into putting the blotter back in the paper for financial gain, and receiving an email is not conducting the public's business in private, nor was that email even copied to any other Assembly members or part of a group email. I'm not sure how it was even determined that that could be called grounds for recall. So I think that's all I really have to say. The only other thing, I guess, that I would say is that in many ways, for me, the damage has been done, regardless of how the recall ends. I've spent nearly 35 years here raising a family and contributing to the community in very meaningful and significant ways. And whenever anybody asks me about Haines, I always say, well, you know, I love the place, but it's the people. And that's still true. I don't want to tell my supporters that isn't true. But at this point, I'm feeling as if I'm an obituary writer, and I feel as if there's been a death in my family. And the grief is going to stay with me. Of course, I know from my work as well that you need to love the living and continue on. And that makes, in some ways, life sweeter. But it doesn't go away. And it's not going to change. And so it's changed my view. This has been really challenging. And as far as I'm concerned, personal and just disillusioning, I think. I will say, though, I need to say one other thing, if I may, that I would like to say that being on the Assembly right now is good. And it's actually kind of fun. I think the Assembly is working really well together. I think we are acting in the best interest of the community. And I am determined to stick it out. And I think if we can get past this, we'll do a lot of good for Haines. And hopefully we'll all learn from what has happened not to behave this way again to our neighbors and our friends and the people that we work with or who take a chance at public service.
Okay, Tresham.
I wish I was as great a speaker as Heather.
And she says all the right things, absolutely, you know. And I would like to thank all the people that have stopped me on the street or anywhere and said how sympathetic they were about this whole thing and how much they supported all of us. And then we got to talk about politics a little bit, which I kind of like to do. And you know, also thank the radio station for broadcasting our names every day, every couple of hours, you know? I mean, talk about great publicity. I mean, this is fabulous, right? you're not really supposed to take anything personally. So I don't take this personally. And the reason why we don't take it personally is because the people are really just talking about themselves and projecting it on us. So I'm so sorry for them. I understand that, it was tough to lose the election. These people have actually been in control of our borough for decades. And they didn't really want to see us, this kind of a change. So, you know, it's understandable that they would do something like this, but of course it is totally baseless. And, you know, if I'm accused of this four-person email, but like if I called you up and said, and left a message on your phone, and you didn't answer it, is this a meeting? I don't think so. So that's all that happened. You know, somebody I sent an email that said, you know, for soliciting a little bit of support, and that's not a violation of any open meeting, as far as I can tell. So, I would like to reiterate what Heather says about the assembly at this point in time. I mean, we really are working very well together. It's probably the most considerate assembly that we've ever had, is we all think about everything that's going on in terms of what is best for the community. We're not talking about our personal interests particularly. We're talking about what we see as best for the community, and every situation requires interesting deliberation. When I first got on the assembly, I'll tell you what, it was rather difficult for me. But in this short period of time, the electorate has actually chosen a whole different way of approaching our future. And I think that if we continue on in the path that we're doing, we can solve a lot of the problems that the community is facing. And I'm hoping that the petitioners realize that they're not the political hotshots that they'd like to think that they are, and they've actually given us even a bully platform here to talk it. And I don't understand why they're not here to defend themselves, because the truth is that it's costing the borough a lot of money. It's costing you, the taxpayers, a lot of money to do this election. And if they don't feel that they're even into it enough to defend this expenditure, I seriously question that as a valid approach to local politics.
Thank you, Tresham. It's been 3 minutes.
Thanks, I got it.
Okay, Tom.
Thank you to KH&S for holding the forum, and thanks to all the folks who are here tonight. It's very encouraging. I've reported on local politics for close to 30 years, and this is the third recall of the borough assembly that has occurred in the 30 years I've been in Haines. So it doesn't come particularly as a surprise. Politics in Haines has always been a very rough game, and why that is, I'm not sure. I think we have a very, we don't have a monolithic community. We have a town with a lot of different interests, and people feel things very strongly. I think recall account is like the nuclear option. I don't. I think it's like going after a mosquito with and the three cases that I've witnessed, it's going after the mosquito with a howitzer. you wind up doing more damage to your house than would be justified to kill the mosquito. And I think that's particularly reflected by Heather's comments. Regardless of whether anyone is recalled from the assembly, this recall is going to do damage, may do damage, to our community in so much as it discourages good people from paying attention to politics, from wanting to get involved in government, and a weak government bows quickly to special interests. We need strong government, we need involvement, we need people to read the paper and go to meetings and consider running and have opinions and speak them. That's the way kind of the founding fathers conjured up this thing we call democracy. I fear from a few of the people I've spoken to, I said, I'm looking for your support. And they said, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it all. And that's the worst thing. If I am recalled, but good people become more active in government, I won't feel half as bad. If I'm not recalled, but more people lose interest in government, that's not a victory for me or the community. So I want to encourage you, regardless of what happens to recall, become more involved, become more vocal, become more active, because that's the core of what drives our government, is good people doing good things. And when good people turn away, then bad things can happen.
All right, now let's get into the allegations. When the recall effort began, there were several charges against the three assembly members. The borough attorney threw out a couple of them. The ones remaining, the attorney explained it wasn't up to him or the clerk to investigate whether there was any violation. He said the facts are to be accepted as true and then left up to the voters to decide. In short, the recall is a political process, not a legal process. The attorney said two of the accusations, if assumed to be true, would count as misconduct in office. The first accusation is that Tom and Heather misused their official positions for financial gain when they expressed their disagreement with the police chief. Police Chief Heath Scott stopped releasing the blotter for a few months. He said it made the department look bad and took too much time. Heather and Tom made comments at a January 10th assembly meeting in support of the blotter being made public. Heath Scott referred to those comments in an email he sent to the interim manager. That email is used as evidence for this coercion allegation. We're going to play Heather and Tom's comments from the January 10th assembly meeting out loud now.
And I want to put in another pitch for putting the blotter in the paper, and especially because I miss it. I miss reading that our police are responsive to a citizen that has a garbage can lid going down the street or somebody's checking on their neighbor, and that we do that. And I think just the smaller, little, more alarming of a crime or something is not as comforting to me as a citizen, and I think to some of our citizens. And I think especially when we're looking at the budget process, it helps if people see how kind and responsive our police are to a lot of things and that they're doing something. And I've heard people say, boy, there must not be much happening, because they don't really understand a lot of that. They just see the little bit of square.
I'd just like to correct something that Heather said, or shine some light on it. I think that the interest in the blotter isn't so much that it is in the newspapers, but for 20 years it was considered, the police log was considered a public document. A person could go in and get the copy of the police log. We chose to publish in the newspaper. For years it was also published on Facebook. This is a trend that's happened in government in the last 5 years. We once could get applications for all the jobs, see who applied. So if you were a person who applied for a job and you didn't get it, you could go in and see who else perhaps didn't get it. That was changed under Mr. Ernest. Drafts of documents were declared privileged by the last manager. So what we've seen is an erosion of the access to public documents in the borough, which is troubling to me, and I'm going to seek GAS committee look into that and we address it. We are not the bosses. They're the bosses. They deserve the documents. We work for them, and then the power comes down through us, and we direct the staff, is my understanding.
So the blotter in question was published weekly in the newspaper. Tom was the paper's publisher at the time, and Heather writes obituaries for it. Tom, what is your response to this coercion accusation?
Well, I think it's an overstatement at best. I was trying to rack my head after I saw Mr. Turner's ad last week of the three incidences where I reportedly badgered the police chief on this issue, and I researched the three times I've publicly addressed the blotter, and one was in a Chilkat Valley News story that explained why the blotter was no longer appearing. And I have copies of that there. Again, the comments follow very closely along with what I said at the January 10th meeting, which is I'm concerned that the blotter as a public document is being denied to the public. Public document means the public owns it. It doesn't belong to the government, it belongs to the people. And so I feel strongly about public documents, both as a career journalist and as an elected official. We're here to serve the people, including with the documents. Oh, and the third instance, I got off track a little bit there, where I addressed it, was on my blog, and I brought copies of that, or you can go to tomorfitt.com, and I explain why the police blotter is important. None of those statements, I think, in any way can be construed as coercion. I think that the actual wording is coercion of a subordinate. Just in a technical sense, there's no way I can coerce the police chief because the police chief works for the manager. He doesn't work for me. The manager works for me. So that's a bit of a stretch, but technically whether I could even coerce the man. But furthermore, I just want to give you a little bit of background on the blotter. I worked at newspapers in Anchorage and Milwaukee, and the blotter was a series of reports that were in the lobby. You didn't even have to go in the police station to get them. They were completely open to the public. And as a cub reporter, I would run in, and there it would be on the clipboard, and you'd go through all the police calls. The other part of the allegation was I did this for a financial gain. And for that to be true, you'd have to impart cash value to the blotter, which is a free document that the police posted for free on their Facebook page. It is an important document. So in this way, the blotter is a little bit like air. It's very important stuff, but you can get it for free. You know, it's very difficult to charge for air. The third part was that there was I was after a financial gain. And that part of this complaint's logic, to my mind, is also flawed in so much in that even if you assume that I was only making these statements out of the interest of the newspaper gaining something, you cannot take something away from me that I believe is rightfully mine or belongs to the public, then say, oh, when I give it back to you, you're gaining something. If you take something from me and give it back to me, I haven't gained anything. I've just gotten back what was rightfully mine. So on several grounds, this allegation is baseless.
Heather, you've said that you talked with Chief Scott separately from the January 10th meeting about the blotter. What did you say in that conversation? And do you think you crossed a line as an assembly member talking to a borough employee in that way?
I talked to the chief, I'm trying to remember this, I think it came in a break in a meeting, and I suggested, this had become surprisingly a big issue between the assembly, the chief, and out of, I thought I was being helpful, and I suggested to him, you know, the history of this, people kind of like the blotter, and that in terms of importance and things that we have to do in the community in his time, that the police blotter was relatively low-hanging fruit, and he might want to just drop that fight. And I suggested it to him as a way to make that his idea in the lobby. I think it was a recess during one of the meetings. So I didn't see that as threatening. And I don't know how well you know Chief Scott, but I
doubt that he would find anything I say, or perhaps anybody, particularly threatening or badgering. I mean, he seems to be a pretty strong person. And so it strikes me as strange that, you know, a grandmother of six somehow has brought the Haines Police Department to its knees over the police blotter by two conversations, and one in public and one in passing in the hall. The other thing I want to say about this, in terms of the financial gain, if I may, is that I have written obituaries for the Chilkat Valley News for 20 years, and I receive $75 for each one. It's not enough.
You're making me look bad.
Yeah, Tom is not a wealthy man, and he's not a particularly generous employer. You know, last year I believe I made $1,000. I don't make enough from the Chilkat Valley News to put on my financial disclosure statement, and I don't work for the paper. I am basically a freelance obituary writer. And the one other thing I want to mention about the email that's being used as grounds for coercion and misconduct is that the email was sent January 11th from the chief to the interim manager and copied to the clerk. Mr. Turner requested that specific email in a public records request. It wasn't part of a blanket request. It wasn't part of the former manager request or one of the other public records requests. It was for that specific email. And when I found out that there was an email that was being used against me and had been determined to have evidence of misconduct, I went and spoke to the interim manager, and I said, what is it? What's going on? And he showed me what it was, and this was months after the fact. And I asked him why, if it was a complaint, he had never spoken to me or about it. And he said it was a non-issue at the time, and that's why we never heard about it, until it came up as evidence that we are doing something wrong. So it was never discussed with me at the time of the complaint.
Okay, thank you. The second accusation is that Tom, Heather, and Tresham violated the Alaska Open Meetings Act, which says more than three members shouldn't engage in a discussion of something the body is authorized to set policy on. In this case, it was an email from Tresham to Heather about a harbor wave barrier extension that the assembly was due to vote on. In the email, Tresham says, quote, Tom and Ron and I are against it, need you there too, unquote. This could imply that Tresham was engaging in something called serial polling, or having a series of individual conversations with assembly members about something they were to vote on. Tresham, what is your response to the charge that you violated the open meetings law with your actions?
Well, as I said in my speech, that you know, if I called you up and left a message on your machine and said something of that sort, is this really a meeting? And I don't think so. And same would be true with an email. So you know, I'm soliciting support, and if Heather doesn't pick up her email for a week, it doesn't even happen, you know. But maybe she did, but still, we didn't have a meeting. We didn't make any decisions. The decision was made at the meeting, and I lost. So I don't know the technicalities of what is a recallable offense or Open Meetings Act violation. You know, I don't really know the ins and outs of all that, but, you know, really what's really happening here is that these people are, like I said, unhappy that they lost the election, and they want to change the outcome of it, and this is the only way that they know how to do it. They're grasping at straws for, they even said so. Ryan Cook said on the radio that, everybody was looking for something that we could pin on these guys so that we could recall them, and until the lawsuit with Mr. Seward was about ready to happen, they didn't have anything to hang it on, And this was the only thing of all, of anything, that they could even begin to hang it on, and it's baseless. So, you know, I think it's just a political ploy on their part, and I don't think it's working. And, you know, if the old Gilbert and Sullivan song, "May the punishment fit the crime," I'm not so sure that's really what's really happening here. I mean, how badly did we violate the public's interest or their concern or their... Yeah, I've lost the word here. Anyway, I don't think that one little email that asked for some support is really an offense worthy of recall.
Since you referred to something that Ryan Cook, one of the sponsors of the recall, said in a KHNS news story, I just want to read that quote out loud. He said, "It's hard to find the evidence. There's a couple we wanted to run with more, but you couldn't find the hard evidence to really keep the full proof of it. That was the hard part. Then you get the ones with the emails back and forth, and you have that proof right there on paper. That's easier to prove." And then when I asked if the recall supporters were essentially trying to find something that stuck enough to qualify, Ryan Cook said yes.
So Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League says the AML advises against serial polling because even though it's not specifically forbidden in the open meetings law, it could be seen as the assembly making decisions in private. So Tresham, do you think your actions leading up to the Harbor Extension vote violated the public's right to see their government's deliberative process? So not necessarily email, but saying these such and such assembly members are for it as being serial polling possibly.
I suppose that's pretty good advice from Debbie.
Kathy.
And I don't think that we're doing that. And, you know, we're really just citizens like you guys out there. You know, we don't really know all the ins and outs of state law. We're not going to, and I personally am a little bit too busy making artwork to study up on it. And so I could be accused of that.
I mean, shouldn't that be your responsibility as an assembly member
I
to
suppose
educate yourself
so.
On those things?
But I didn't.
So you're saying that you don't know if you were violating the Open Meetings Act?
I still don't think we were. You know, like I said, it's just I don't see that any laws were broken. In fact, Jared out here in the audience researched it, and his wife Jean, and they found no laws were broken.
We do have a question from the audience pertaining to that. You said in that email to Heather that certain assembly members, that you knew how certain assembly members would vote, Tom and Ron. Was that knowledge because you called and asked each one, or was it simply a reflection of how they voted at previous meetings? That's a question from the audience.
What's this again?
It's asking, so you said in the email that Tom and Ron, that you knew how they felt about it, or you thought that you knew how they were going to vote. Did you know that because you had called them and talked to them about it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Okay, Heather and Tom are both included in this Open Meetings Act accusation. Heather, your response to Tresham was redacted in the public records request in the email in question here. Do you remember, or can you tell us what your reply was?
You know, I wish I knew, and I don't. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm not really good at organizing my emails. And the borough iPad and the way the borough does business has been a kind of a nightmare to work with. I think I may have responded, I'll think about it, or I may have responded, thank you, or I may have responded about another subject. I honestly don't know. But what I would like to say about this is that we did not do the public's business in private. There was no meeting happened. I mean, I'll ask you, or maybe I could ask Don Turner because he's here and has just chosen not to speak. But say, Don, if you
if the Ports and Harbor Committee, if you got an email from another Ports and Harbor Committee member that said that two of the other Ports and Harbor Committee members were for the 33-foot extension, and they need you to lobby a couple of the assembly members, and would you go ahead and please do that? And you replied, I'll think about it. And that email wasn't copied to any other of the Ports and Harbor Committee members. There was no blind copy to anybody. And you knew how they felt about it because everybody had said it multiple times in public meetings. Everybody knows that the names that were mentioned, Ron and Tom, had issues with it. The whole assembly did. It was voted down the first time. So my question is, Don, would you have been in a public meeting if you'd received an email from someone mentioning two other names of a Ports and Harbor Committee?
I got no comment.
You have no comment? Thank you.
Tom, your response to the serial polling issue.
I guess I was just bumfuzzled that I was even drawn in on this because I'm mentioned in the email that went between two other assembly members. And it reminds me of a time when I was in high school when there was a particularly unpopular kid in class and two other kids were talking about him and he got a demerit because they were talking about him. So I feel like the kid that got the demerit because other people were talking about him. But anyway, this is such a minor, I think, issue as to be farcical. This is an individual email from one member to the other. What Tresham did was what we all have to do to some extent before we get to a meeting, which is say, what do you feel about this? Now, most elected leaders won't say, and I will almost never say, I'm going to vote this way. We say, this is what I feel. Because anyone who's ever served in office knows when you get up there, you basically want the freedom to change your mind. So it's not unusual or it's not illegal for individual members to speak to other individual members outside of a meeting, as long as business is not being conducted. Now, the question of serial polling, I believe, applies to I'm for it. Will you sign on for it? And I think that such an email would have gone to all four people to make it a serial email. It wasn't a serial email, it was an individual email. So I don't think any business was being done. I didn't receive the email. Ron Jackson was also named in the email. I don't believe received the email. It wasn't BCC'd or, what's the other one? CC'd. or anything like that. So I believe that our lawyer flawed. Our lawyer said when he allowed this to go ahead as grounds or possible grounds for if it were true, he said in his analysis that the Supreme Court has not ruled clearly in the Open Records or the Open Meetings Act on serial or group emails. It wasn't a serial email. It wasn't a group email. It was an individual email, an individual message from one assembly member to another. So I just don't think that it nears the benchmark for being a violation of the Open Meetings Act. If members can't talk at all outside public meetings, man, people complain about three-hour meetings? Brother. We'll be there for 12 hours. There has to be some interaction allowed between assembly members, or we'll all be outside of meetings, or we will be completely dysfunctional. The key is not to make any decisions outside of meetings. And I don't believe that. I think Tresham in this instance was trying to gather support. And that's not taking a vote. It's not committing yourself. I don't believe Heather would have committed herself because I don't think she supported what Tresham was trying to do. So on several grounds, I just don't think that it amounts to any violation of the Open Meetings Act. And quite frankly, if I were a wealthier person, I would have taken both these grounds to an attorney before it ever got to collecting signatures, because I think both these grounds would not pass muster. Now, I don't know if you folks remember, but in 1993,
Stay focused on the specific questions. We're going to give you an opportunity at the end to...
Okay. The Supreme Court has previously supported the Haynesborough off-bounds recall, and that happened in 1993. So it has occurred that recalls have gone forward, and the Haynesborough was vindicated. The Haynesborough Assembly was vindicated by the Supreme Court of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you.